Welcome to a new edition of Mercenary Musings Radio featuring mining analyst and commodities expert, the mercenary geologist Mickey Folt. We are your most trusted source for in-depth analysis and commentary on commodities, mining, and the junior resource sector. And joining us from Mercenary Musings World Headquarters in lovely Albuquerque, New Mexico, the one and only mercenary geologist himself, Mickey Folt. Mickey, how have you been?
I've been well, Rob, and you?
No complaints at all at this end, Mickey, but you know what? It was a bit of a head-scratcher when you told me what we're going to be talking about, and we are focusing on zeolites. And when you mentioned that, I thought, what the heck are you talking about? I have no idea, or at least going into this, I had no idea what zeolites are. So lay the groundwork for us, Mickey. What exactly are they?
Well, it's a group of about 40 naturally occurring minerals. They're essentially hydrated feldspars, and they're microporous, and it leads to a lot of uses. First discovered in 1756 by a Swede named Axel Kronsted, and he discovered the mineral stilbite. When he was heating it, it produced copious steam, and that's from all the adsorbed water that these things contain. And zeolite comes from Greek, and it essentially means boiling stone.
Okay, and I believe that Axel is the geologist best known for the discovery of nickel.
Well, that could be, Rob. You've got me on that one.
Okay. Oh, boy. First time I've ever stumped the great mercenary geologist. there's not a lot of this stuff produced naturally, though, is there, compared to synthetic production?
Well, there's certainly lots of synthetic production, but the natural occurring zeolites are pretty important. They occur mainly in mafic volcanic rocks. They're alteration product. They're generally mined from volcanic ash that is reactive with alkaline groundwater. But they also occur in sedimentary rocks and shallow marine basins and in low-grade metamorphic rocks, and they actually determine the grade of some metamorphic rocks.
Well, I was going to ask you about the properties of zeolites. What makes them so special, really, is the fact that they're porous. They're, the molecular structure is really hollow, isn't it?
Well, it is. They're so-called molecular sieves, and they have regular 3D tetrahedra as a crystal structure, and they essentially have empty cylinders inside the mineral, which can absorb lots of things, and because of that, they are very useful. The natural ones, there, as we said, there's about 40 minerals, but there's greater than 200 synthetic minerals. And they're made synthetically. They heat aqueous solutions of alumina and silica in, with sodium hydroxide and produce these minerals. And essentially, for geologists, it's an artificial hydrothermal method of creation. So most mineral deposits occur by hydrothermal activity.
Well, Mickey, tell us how zeolites are mined and processed today. Give us the background there.
They always are open pit mined because they are essentially an industrial mineral and they're bulk mined. They are crushed and then maybe screened, then they're milled, then they're dried. They're size sorted and they're shipped in bags or as a bulk commodity. So very simple process, pretty small markets overall, but very low cost, little competition for some of the specialty uses. The synthetics include some things called heteroatoms, in which they insert things as gallium and germanium and boron and zinc and tin and titanium into these things for very special uses.
Okay, and who are the big producers of this material, Mickey?
Well, China is the largest, or actually a group of countries called others is the largest, followed by China, South Korea, New Zealand, U.S., and Turkey. U.S. produces quite a lot of zeolites for local use.
Okay, well, I've seen that, Mickey. There's perhaps an operation not all that far from you in Bowie, Arizona. There's an operation zeolite mines there.
Well, that's true, but you really miss the one that's just down the road from me, and that's in Winston, New Mexico, maybe 100 miles south of here. Mm-hmm. And it is the U.S. largest producer. The operation in Bowie, Arizona is also owned by this particular company that operates in New Mexico. And it also operates in Oregon and Nevada, other places that produce. There's only six U.S. companies with nine mines total. St. Cloud Mining, the New Mexico operation, is by far the largest. And the other operations include a couple others in California and Texas.
Okay. What's the approximate world production and demand for this, Mickey? Do we have a good handle on that?
We certainly do, about 1.1 million tons per year, mm-hmm. according to the USGS. And we already mentioned the important producers. And the U.S. produces somewhere around 95,000 tons a year, so mm-hmm. more or less 8 or 9% of world production. But U.S. production has increased 50% since 2014.
Okay, well, now let's get on to how this stuff is used. Mickey, we're getting into it a little bit, and then we took a little bit of a left turn, but I think the where this stuff is used and how it's used today may be a bit of an eye-opener for some people.
Well, the largest use is actually laundry detergent worldwide. Not really used for that in the U.S., but because these things can adsorb water and other gases, et cetera. They have lots of uses, and they can adsort them and then heat it up, and you can reuse them. So used mainly for animal feed, for desiccants, for anti-caking, the same thing with laundry detergents. Water purification, very important use. Petroleum catalysts, absorbents, desiccants, we've already alluded to that. Mm-hmm. Gas separation, natural gas, noble gases. Freon, formaldehyde, all those sorts of things you can. And essentially all these separation things basically are separated by size of molecules and the size of the particular zeolite and these cylinders that exist, empty cylinders within them. One important use, and it's likely to become an important future use too, is nuclear waste processing. Mm-hmm. So you can store and separate nuclear fission products and nasties from the some that are not by this molecular sieve sizing process.
Okay, well,
also used in solar collectors, mm-hmm. Kitty litter, because it doesn't clump up. Yep. When the New Mexico mine, St. Cloud's original mine, was started for kitty litter, that's been replaced a lot lately. Soil treatment, you can impregnate them with potassium and ammonia and slowly release potassium and nitrogen into the soil. Mm-hmm. In the U.S., the most important uses really are animal feed, odor control, and water purification.
Okay, you mentioned kitty litter. I'm going to go upstairs after we finish this, Mickey, and take a look at. I have a rabbit. I hate to admit it. Okay, in the house, uh-huh. I bought it for my daughter when she was in grade 10. The damn thing is still alive today. But we use the kitty litter for the rabbit's cage. So I'm going to take a look at the ingredients in that and see if there's any indication of zeolites being contained in the kitty litter. But you also mentioned soil testing and whatnot. This was used during in the aftermath of the Fukushima nuclear disaster, was it not?
Yeah, it was used to sequester cesium, which is one of the nastiest of the byproducts. Commonly causes thyroid cancer. So, mm-hmm. So they used zeolites to glom onto the cesium and sequester it in the ocean waters.
Is there enough out there today to meet the demand?
There's enough to till the cows come home, Rob.
Okay.
No matter how much you feed them. There are zeolites all over the world. They're very common. As with all industrial minerals, it depends on how close you are to the market, and because they are very low cost product, they sell for somewhere in the U.S. between $100 and $300 a ton. It's a small market. I took an average of $200 a ton. Calculate that out. The U.S. market would be less than $20 million a year. Total world market, around $200 million a year. So not a big industry in the U.S. employs 100 plus or minus employees in the country.
Okay. Well, I'll state the obvious here, I guess. Needless to say, there's no investing angle to this story, really, is there, Mickey?
I'm going to disagree with you. One of the reasons we're talking about this today was I was approached about a month ago by one of my friends and former radio host in the business, and he had been presented with a zeolite opportunity in Mexico, and he wanted me to do an evaluation on it. So as far as public companies know, but certainly the New Mexico operation is growing by leaps and bounds. It's acquired over the course of its 25 years of operation, something on the three other operations, and is by the far the largest. So just because you're small doesn't mean you can't make a lot of money in the mining business.
Okay, indeed. And that is your area of specialty, isn't it? Small caps.
Well, these are my area of specialty generally is the Toronto Venture Exchange and nano caps, but this is even a smaller sort of deal.
Okay. Well, perhaps a nice way to wrap it up, Mickey. We'll reconnect in about a month's time, just prior to the new year.
Look forward to it, Rob.
That's Mickey Fulp, the Mercenary Geologist. You can find him on the web at mercenarygeologist.com. You can also hear Mickey's latest opinion on kitco.com. I'm Robert Graham at Mercenary Musings Radio. Thanks for listening.